Blog Talk Radio.
Oakley of the PPJ Gazette Online, and this is the TS Radio Network. Tonight, we are bringing on board Marcia Joyner, and she's going to be picking up the hospice shows. Carly Walden, of course, started these here about a year ago and got the door opened on this and built this audience up. She's unable right at this time to pick the shows back up, and Marcia has graciously stepped in here to pick these shows up and keep them going. We want to get the word out to everyone. I want you all to help me welcome Marcia Joyner on board to TS Radio. Marcia, thank you so much for doing these shows.
Oh, thank you for the opportunity, Marty.
Yes,
and
for
I
our listeners and for new people,
her as well.
Yes, thank you, Carly. Carly is on with us. She's behind Marcia all the way on this. And Marcia, to get you started, why don't you give, for people who might not be familiar with you, give them some background on you, how you became involved in this, and what your aim is here.
Absolutely. I became involved in this last year when I met Carly. I believe it was December a year ago. And when I found out that euthanasia was going on around the country. My mom was in hospice, we thought, to be taken care of and not to be put down, and they did that in June of 2017. I searched for 6 months trying to find anybody else because I thought it was unique to her because my dad had been the hospice chaplain at that particular facility for 15 years. So that's where our family thought she was safe. And nothing could be farther from that. And they actually took her in, tricked her into going into the hospice facility on site where they immediately started giving her morphine, Ativan, and she was already on fentanyl. They increased it to 100 micrograms. So after losing my mom horribly like that, I just couldn't believe it. We, you know, tried to get some support, and everybody just, you know, made kind of comments like, well, it's at hospice, what do you expect? Well, what you're told when you go in is they're going to take care of you. They'll come. They would help my dad, who was her care provider, who had been the hospice chaplain there, and they would, she wouldn't have to go to the doctor each time, and it would make it easier on the family. They lied. And that's why when I found out that her case was not unique, in talking to Ron Panzer of Stealth Euthanasia, he wrote that book, and it's Hospice Patient Alliance.org, which is an excellent resource, that he turned me on to Carly. And Carly and I met, and she allowed me to be a guest speaker last February.
Yes.
And
right.
It just, my whole point in this is getting across to people that hospice is not what it used to be, and they will tell you anything to put your loved one onto hospice, and they take advantage of you, they lie to you, and they murder your loved ones.
Mm-hmm.
My case is not unique, I have found out. I wanted to dedicate the beginning of the shows to Jacques Lois. And that is Carly's grandmother, who survived 4 years after they told her that she was dying and that she had gone into hospice. Carly and her dad were smart enough to figure it out. They got her out of there, and she lived 4 more years. Sadly, she passed in November. And
yes.
So I'd like to dedicate this first show, Carly, to your sweet grandmother.
Oh, God, Marcia, that means everything to our family.
I know it does. You're welcome.
What an honor.
She fought the battle.
What an honor. Thank you so much, Marcia.
Absolutely.
And the only good part of this story is when she did go, she was at home surrounded by people she loved in her own bed, and
yes.
she was not being tormented in one of these facilities.
Exactly.
No.
Marcia, thank you
and she
for
had
that.
No
I think
drugs. No drugs.
No drugs.
It was a natural death.
Yes. And I don't think when it comes time to pass, it gets any better than that. I truly don't. And we're all going to go someday. May I please go in the same way with the people around me that love me. I know there are some. They're probably few and far between, but they're out there. And, you know, it just...
We love you.
You know, I... it just, you know what I'm saying?
I love you,
that
Marty,
is the
for
only,
sure.
Well, thanks. I love you too, sweetie. And... But Marcia, as we pick these shows back up, what are you hoping to accomplish? What do you hope will come out of these shows?
Well, what I would like to happen is for the murders to stop. But aside from that, I think it's much larger than we are. What my problem is that people believe what hospice is telling them. So we
yes.
want to get, you know, with all the shows, with the people that are coming on, I want to have people come on, give them an opportunity to tell their story. It's therapeutic to be able to talk about it. I think Carly
mm-hmm.
can attest to the fact last February when I was on her show, it was very difficult to hold it together because I was so emotional about it. I still have sleepless nights. I still think, what if and why didn't I do this? But I'm calmer about it. I can talk about it now. And I know that I can't save my mother, but perhaps I can save other people's mothers, dads, husbands, because it's happening across the United States. There are states that have assisted suicide that people, I didn't even realize that until I started delving into this and researching. And it's happening across the country, and they're trying to create more hospices, and they have a bill that we've been fighting against, but the bill is to create more hospices, and the reason for that, they call it palliative care and training, but with the baby boomer generation coming up, they have to have something to do with us, and we're costing too much money.
We've become a waste.
That, you know, right. You
waste
you cost less money than
yes.
you're putting in. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and whenever an individual begins to affect the hospital's budget in a negative way, that's when the caseworker and the doctor comes in and they recommend hospice most of the times or a nursing home.
Right.
Do you
right.
know what scared me when I started researching this after listening to Carly's shows? I found out that once you're in hospice, they create the conditions by pulling nutrition and hydration and starting these drugs. They create the conditions that say futility of care. And then
right.
any doctor, at that point, any doctor, somebody on the other side of the world who has never seen that person, doesn't know anything about them, has never tended to them in any way, can call for end of life.
Exactly.
To me, this is just... Absolutely, if this isn't anything but calculated murder, what else would you call this? When a total stranger can be called on the phone and say, oh, well, according to what you're telling me, pull the plug. Go ahead and give the kill shot. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's
well,
right.
What you were talking about, the dehydration and withdrawing food, the problem is, and I'm hoping a recent friend of mine is on the line. We have a situation with her dad, and he's lost weight, I mean, around 100 pounds, and he is weak now. Well, he's weak because they're giving him medicine. They're giving him the Ativan and the morphine. So he's not feeling like eating, so he's not awake enough. It makes him weak because he's not able to eat. And then then they put a catheter in, and that causes its own issues with that. And
yes,
that is exactly what they're doing. They're euthanizing him over a slow period of time, and they will lie to you the entire time telling you, oh, well, you know, I mean, he's so weak he can't get up. Well, he can't get up because he's not eating. He's not getting nutrition.
Right.
And he's not doing that because he's not staying awake enough because of the medication, which is causing him to not feel like eating.
Oh,
it's
my
vicious.
God.
That's right. That is right.
Do you know what bothers me is the people willing to participate in this. Where did so many, I don't know if they're sociopaths, if they're psychopaths, I don't know what they are, but where did they find so many of these people willing to participate in this slow death that they levy on these people? We are more compassionate for prisoners that are put to death than we are for the elderly in these situations.
Right.
Yes.
You
well,
know, we
and
do
I'm
it
not
a
sure.
matter of minutes.
I thought about this with my mother's situation because the nurse lied to us after we took her off of the morphine and Ativan for more than 24 hours. And the nurse said, well, she's still lethargic, so that's not what it is. Well, us not realizing it takes more than 24 hours for you to be off of those drugs. Plus, the fentanyl is 100 times stronger than morphine, 50 times stronger than heroin. So there was no way she was going to become awake because they were drugging her. So either the nurse did not know that, and if she doesn't know it, she shouldn't be in her position, or she did know it, and she bold-faced lied, and she shouldn't be in that position.
Right.
There you go. There you go. But this is what I'm saying, Marcia, Carly, you two. Where do they find these people that have no compassion, no empathy, no sympathy, and who will do this to a vulnerable living human being? Where do they find these people?
Well, I believe that a lot of them they go through schooling and they're taught that this is the way to go, and it's not. And then once they get into the situation, and you know, some people know very clearly what they're doing and continue to do it because they make more money, you know, the more people that come in. And it's just like it is. It's just, you know, but I've often asked that question, Marty, and you know, we always say, you know, we know you have a mortgage to pay, we know you have kids, but please pick another profession where you're not killing people.
Yeah, exactly.
I think there's a mixture of both: people that know exactly what's going on and do it and are desensitized to it, and then others that do blow the whistle.
Well,
you know?
I think, that in addition to that, because I think at the place where my mom was in the facility, I think some of them were complicit. And I think some of them, when they came in and saw my mom, saw that she was in this state, and they decide, well, they're in pain or they've got this, and it's putting them out of their misery. They don't need to live. You know, so I think some of them may have that angel of mercy complex, where they believe, well, this is best for them. They shouldn't be making that decision, and I'm certainly not giving them, you know, any excuse on that. But I think some of them just don't know. When they come in and see them already in that position, they just don't know.
Yeah. Do you know, and I've talked about this before, Marcia, back in 2010 when they passed the Affordable Care Act and hospice got that $11.5 billion infusion of cash to go from Good Samaritan to the Grim Reaper, I went to an orientation down by the Twin Cities. They were looking for volunteers. And there was a registered nurse up there who was conducting this orientation. Now, quite honestly, I had no intentions of doing this. I just wanted to hear what they had to say. This woman is standing up there telling them, now, when you get these patients, You tell them that they've had a long life and it's time for them to let go. Don't put their family through it, and they're going to argue with you, but just tell them they've had a long life and it's somebody else's turn now, and don't make your family suffer like this. And then when you talk to the patient or the family, you tell them you don't want them to suffer, do you? Because the family's going to argue with you because they want to keep that person alive. And you have to convince them that you're doing the most merciful thing. And, you know, eventually, I got up. I couldn't take anymore. I got up. I said, why don't you just get a .38 and put a bullet in their head and get it over with?
Right.
And she backed
up. That's
right. Several other people. Yes. Several other
people.
I said, I can't listen to
them.
Yes.
It is brainwashing.
Right. And they do.
Until they come into the job and then people die. Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
And,
some people, you know.
I think some of the people that are listening tonight are on the Facebook site that Liz Isner started, and it's called Murdered by Hospice. And when you read the stories, they're the same drugs and they're the same words that the hospice people are using and telling these family members exactly what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And it's lies. And we believe it because you were supposed to trust the hospice people are compassionate.
And, you know, back in 2000, and 2000 and then into February 2001, my brother was dying from Agent Orange. Hospice came in. And he would sit with my brother. This man would sit with my brother. He helped us bathe him. He gave my sister-in-law time to just get out of the house and go do something else. He was a very compassionate, wonderful man. He never medicated my brother. He never did anything but help us care for him. And with all of that, I don't hear that anymore. I don't hear them coming in. When they come in now, from what I understand, they come in with this bag of drugs that they put in your refrigerator. And one of those,
that's exactly correct.
One of those, is what we call the kill shot. Earlier today, Marcia, you and I talked about the use of gabapentin. Gabapentin is supposed to be a pain medication similar to Vicodin and oxycodone. But when you administer it to the elderly, explain to people what happens to them.
Well, it's a hallucinogenic type drug. And it's supposed to, one of the original purposes of it was for restless leg syndrome. And my mom had taken that at one point, but mom didn't have any cartilage. And so it was bone to bone when she moved. And she had several replacements, hip replacements, shoulder replacements. But on her left hip, it had never been replaced. So they gave this to her. Within a matter of days, my mom was not talking like my mom. I mean, if you told her to step back to the potty chair, she walked forward. When it got really bad, I had just driven down there in Georgia, and she said, take me to the hospital, and we took her to the hospital. Well, she had a urinary tract infection, but she also was having severe drug reactions between the Vicodin and the gabapentin, and she thought that everybody was just out to get her. She thought it was an occult.
Mm-hmm.
She was afraid of the pastor when he came there, and it just completely messes up your system. That is one of the black box drugs that they now call. Ativan should never be given with morphine, and yet Ativan is and morphine are going hand in hand. And I believe several people have talked about the Haldol. I think, Carly, you had also talked about that.
Oh.
And they call it the ham sandwich, Haldol, Ativan, and morphine.
Disgusting.
So the gabapentin is also a drug that they are now recognizing, and they're saying you shouldn't be giving it to elder people, and yet they do, and they know they shouldn't do it. And if you read about it, you know, if you Google it and you read about it, it'll tell you, don't give it to the elderly. It's dangerous. It causes hallucinations, and it can cause death. But they give it to the elderly because they don't care. That's what their intent is.
And it makes them appear to be dysfunctional and have dementia.
Exactly.
When in actuality, they don't. They're having a severe reaction to this horrendous drug. And it makes me, I think one of the most disgusting things I've seen girls in, and once Carly started her shows and I started really looking into this, was this site where all these nurses were signed up on it. And they were talking, they were joking on there about dealing with the elderly, and if they gave them any trouble, tell them, well, you must want to ride on the van, at a van. And I actually came on there and said, every one of you need to have your damn license jerked, every one of you. And of course, attacked me severely. I've just held my ground. None of you need to have access to patients anywhere. And they were joking about this. This was some kind of something funny. They know exactly what that drug does to these people. They know how it messes up their minds, makes them dysfunctional, disoriented, paranoid. It absolutely puts them in orbit. And you give this to them knowing this is what it's going to do. And I go back to the doctors on this. Who prescribed this? Who prescribed this knowing what it was going to do to that elderly person? And yet they're untouchable.
But Marty, it goes back to they don't care. And they've gotten away with it for so long. And people don't, you know, when I meet people and talk about this, I mean, they look at me either like I've lost my mind and I'm grieving and I'm just looking for somebody to blame. I'm not looking for, I blame myself for not figuring it out soon enough to save my mom. But other people look at that and they're horrified because they don't know. And you don't know unless you've watched a loved one go through this and be murdered systematically so they can't eat and they die of dehydration. And what an absolutely horrible way to die.
Yes, that's
very painful. And it's very painful. That is a very painful
And the Ativan renders you unable to tell people that you know, I need help. What are you doing to me?
Yes,
And then the morphine is sleeping.
They're being put into an eternal sedation when you come into hospice. That's what they're doing. Yeah.
I've had a lot of people tell me in discussing this, I watched them, they were murdering my mom, my dad, whomever it was, right in front of my eyes. I didn't realize what they were doing. I thought they cared. I didn't know they were killing them. And the guilt that they're carrying from this, you know, that I stood there and watched and said, okay, because these are doctors and nurses, they wouldn't do this. And then I find out later they did do this. This is exact, and we watched them do it. I think that is probably one of the most insidious part. Yes. And you had faith in these people and you trusted them. Yes.
They give you a pamphlet on it and say, your loved one is dying. This is the process. And so you read about it, and all the things you read are what your parent or your loved one, your husband, those are the symptoms that you see. But what they don't tell you is those symptoms are caused by the drugs that they gave them.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes, exactly.
It's vicious.
That's right.
It is.
This is
honestly just so sick. It's so sick. The thing is, they do want rid of us. They're screaming about the fertility rate has dropped to 40% of what it was 10 years ago, meaning we're not developing, we're not producing enough people to replace the people dying off. But the people dying off, that number has spiked, and it has spiked in direct relation to hospice.
Right.
And so they are, you know, this is a plan in action that's going on here. This is nothing accidental. This is this is not a coincidence. I don't believe in coincidences anyway. But there is a plan in motion here. If you're over 60, you've got a big old target on you. They want you gone.
If you go to the hospital and you have repeated issues where you have a stroke, you have a heart attack, you break a bone, you go, you know, rehabilitation, you go home, you break another bone, you come back, you're targeted. Because they do not want you coming back in. You're costing too much money, whether you're on Medicare or Medicaid. You're costing too much money.
That's correct.
Well, and that's, I talked earlier today, they have now tied Medicaid to Medicare. Medicaid used to be for the poor, the working poor. You had to be 100% minimally below the poverty level to get it. Now they when they're offering these insurance Advantage plan, Medicare Advantage, they are giving you Medicaid, which you've already paid for with your taxes. You've already funded with your property taxes. You have funded it all of your life, but now you're paying an insurance company who has contracted with the state. You're paying an insurance company a premium, and for this, they are offering you all these services. You can get glasses and hearing aids and dentures, and my goodness, a sunshiny sky is wonderful. But the kicker of it is, if you're on Medicaid for 5 minutes on one of these Medicare Advantage plans, like through Humana or other companies, when you pass away, they have the right to recapture every dime they spent on your care. So they can come against your estate, even if there's a survivor, a surviving spouse, joint tenancy, co-ownership of property, and they can recapture. They call it the state has the right to recapture what they invested in your health care, but it's actually the insurance company who is going to recapture the money they paid out for your care. Don't take these Advantage, Medicare Advantage plans. I don't care. It's nothing more than a property rights grab. Nobody will inherit anything until the insurance company has been paid back. And that's the way that is. But you're not supposed to know that.
I'm sure that's in small writing somewhere. But they're not going to come forward and let you know that unless you research. And then that is what we have come to. We have to research everything, every drug that they put your family member on. It, you know, you have to be, I don't mean to sound like an alarmist, but if you go in for just a procedure, if you have to go to the hospital, you have to research. And for goodness sakes, do not ever sign, do not resuscitate, because DNR, because that gives the doctor the right to make all your decisions for you, not your family members, not you, even if you're awake some of the time. The doctor makes your decisions. And if you're elderly,
and say that again, because people really deal with that. They don't understand the DNRs. They do not. And if you can just say that again, it gives the doctors the right to make the decisions for you.
Right.
People don't understand that.
No, people believe that it just means if I'm in a vegetative state and there is absolutely no hope for me and I'm just going to sit here on machines, then okay, don't resuscitate me. That is not what it means. That is not what it means. What it means is if you are in the middle of an operation and your heart stops, they won't bother to bring you back. If they give you these drugs and your heart stops, you stop breathing, they will not do anything to bring you back. So you do not want to sign a do not resuscitate ever. And in the, when you go in the hospital, they want to get you to sign it. If you go in for a procedure, you do not want to ever sign that. You have the right to say no. You have the right to say, I don't want those drugs, and I don't want my family member to have those drugs. So if you have a DNR, you need to tear it up. And you need a medical
or
power
go to the
of
hospital
attorney.
Too. I don't mean to interrupt, but going to the hospital because if you go to your hospital, make sure you go to the and make sure that they do not have a DNR on you. A lot of people have had DNRs that weren't aware of it.
Well, do you know that
they can say that? They can ask you that question, do you want this? And the doctor can sign for you. So you want to make it very clear, no, I don't want it. I'm not signing for it. And if they do have one on you, like at the hospital, you need to ask them to see it, and you need to rip it in half.
Well, absolutely. But see, here's the thing. Hospice now, under the new rules, and this was standing anyway, but now it's codified into law, hospice, the doctor or even the charge nurse can issue a DNR on you, override your doctor, override your family and your wishes, and can issue a DNR if they think that you're not worth saving. And and it's that charge nurse you need to watch out for, because they're the ones that normally, as I understand it, will do the deed. We've got about a minute here, Marcia, before we bring your guest on.
Okay.
I can tell these shows are going to be hot. Carly, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Marcia. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Carly. And you started all of this, so I'll just, you know, carry the torch for a while.
Yes, absolutely.
We want to keep the word out there.
Oh, yes.
Yep.
We absolutely do.
Yes.
Absolutely. And I thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. I look forward to hearing the rest of the show.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks, Carly.
All right. Thank
you, Carly.
Okay,
thanks for having me on.
Okay. I'd like to introduce tonight, we have on with us Lisa Ann and her father. She'll tell you the story about her dad, and his name was Bill Papania. I hope I pronounced that right. But he's one of the youngest in our Murdered by Hospice Facebook group. He was only 67. So, Lisa, I'm going to turn it over to you and let you tell your story.
I was listening to everything you guys were talking about, and I do want to make some clarification. A POA has the power to put somebody as a DNR. My father never wanted to be a DNR, and my mother made him a DNR behind his back. And even the my father, long story short, my father was put into hospice. He was medically kidnapped. He was tortured. He was isolated, kept in a wheelchair 24/7, forced to be in a wheelchair, and he was murdered. And I'm taking full responsibility for this, but my father was murdered, Bill Papania, at Oak Hills Nursing and Rehab, and the hospice group that was used to be involved to admit my father into hospice was Optum Hospice, which has now become, which is now known as Compassus Hospice. My father, my mother tried to put him into hospice, but hospice is not like what people think. Hospice does nothing except admit people in there. And they come twice a week, and they drop off the drugs. They literally have no contact with the patient. And just a little word of, just to let people know, too, the hospice group that Oak Hills Nursing and Rehab of Cincinnati used, Optum Hospice, was investigated by the Department of Justice, and was turned in by two whistleblowers, two nurses, who turned them in because Optum Hospice was making them put patients into hospice who were not terminal. And as of 2016, the Department of Justice found Optum Hospice guilty of Medicare fraud, and they were ordered to pay back $18 million back to the Department of Justice. And then what they did was change to Compassus Hospice. But here's the crazy thing. They were found, they were being investigated as of 2014, yet my father was admitted into hospice in 2015. So they were still putting people into hospice while they were being investigated by the Department of Justice. And
can
my mother
I ask
tried
a question
to,
here?
Yes,
was anybody
do.
Prosecuted? Was anyone prosecuted for doing this other than being fined? Was anyone prosecuted? Did anyone go to jail?
Marty, I'm so glad you asked that because I look at the FBI's website and I'll look at the Department of Justice because they'll post who they've – because they've got this task force that they're real proud of. And they'll they put – there's doctors that have been – found guilty. No doctor or hospice group, though, has been charged with murder, though. That is what I cannot believe. None of them are charged with murder, but they're, I've seen doctors put in prison for this fraud. I've seen hospice owners put in prison, but not because of murder, but because of Medicare or Medicaid fraud.
Do you mean the facility
oh my God,
your dad was at, they were put into jail?
Oh, no, not the facility
Medicare
my
fraud?
Father was at. No, no, no.
No, not that.
Okay. Not yet. No,
okay.
I'm talking about other hospice groups that have had owners put into prison. I'm seeing doctors.
Well, like
be
the
in
one
charge.
That we had in Texas and Nova.
Yes.
You're right. Okay.
Yes.
Gotcha.
And doctors,
gotcha.
But they're not going for murder though. They're going for fraud instead. You know, our government is part of this. But the thing is, they encourage these doctors. These doctors get a fee for putting somebody into hospice, okay? The nursing
yes.
home gets a fee. And I also found this out, and I will be the first to admit I have posted everything on my page. And to show people, Haldol, Ativan, morphine, otherwise known as a ham sandwich, is the most common drugs, but
right.
What is just so disheartening, though, is that the government, they know this is going on, they turn a blind eye to it, but if they catch these people taking advantage, like there was a hospice owner of multiple nursing homes in Florida who was part of the largest bust for Medicare fraud, and it took 20 years of an investigation, and it started with his father, and then he inherited the business from his father, and this guy was only 47 years old, and they had been doing this investigation on him and his father for 20 years, and they got him for him, doctors he was using, hospitals, facilities, all of that, for over $900 million of Medicare fraud. And he's currently in a prison right now, and he's not looking at getting out ever.
But
he was showing
okay.
off, though. Yeah, not for murder.
But not for murder.
Okay, and
well,
what happened to the $900 million in fraud? Was there restitution? Was he forced to pay it back?
Well,
did they collect any of it?
It's a famous case that you can actually Google.
Yes.
Right now, he's in prison awaiting trial. He's not even been to trial yet, but the FBI, the feds, all that good stuff, they've got him where he couldn't even get bond, okay? They considered him a flight risk. This guy was so arrogant and showing off that he was using helicopters to travel from place to place. I mean, he was just living such an extravagant lifestyle, and then they finally had enough, and after 20 years, they closed their investigation and went after him, and he's currently waiting in prison right now. And it's
20 years
mind-boggling
to run him down, huh?
Right, to continue that.
To get him and his father.
Mm-hmm. But, Lisa, let me take you back to your dad. What was the original reason that your dad went to the hospital?
Here's the craziness of it all. My father, on June 9th, it was taken to the hospital where my mother dropped him off.
Can you give me a year on that?
Yes, it
was
in June of 2015.
Okay, so the same year that they killed him.
Killed him,
okay.
Yes.
All right, gotcha.
My father was being treated for esophageal cancer. He had gotten esophageal cancer in 2014. And he was seeing doctors for it. And at one point he had gotten, he was going to visit, and I guess my mother kept all of his appointments. She kept track of all of his appointments and was supposed to let him know when he had appointments. And he actually went into remission in 2014. Well, later on in the year, in 2014, I got a call from one of the nurses of his, doctors who called me. Her name was Susie, and she said, Lisa, where has your father been? He's not been showing up for his appointments. I had no idea that was happening because I had actually gone to some of these appointments, and I was on his HIPAA form, and I said, Susie, I have no idea what's going on. I will find out, and I'll call you back. I called my father. I said, Dad, why are you missing your PTINR appointments? His reason was, Lisa, I haven't missed any appointments. I just don't have one. Your mom keeps track of that and lets me know. I said, Dad, you're missing appointments. And then the phone was grabbed from my mother, and she told me that this is none of your business, and she hung up on me. The next day, and I have the records to show this, my mother went to the doctor, Dr. Kurt Lunenberg, and had me removed from my father's HIPAA list. And that way they could no longer call me, and I could no longer get any information. I found out that I was removed.
And he couldn't keep his appointments. He didn't know about them.
Exactly. And 100% Jeez. Correct. And the next day I called Susie. I said, Susie, I talked to my – because this was towards the evening. I called her and the next day. I said, Susie, my dad didn't even know he had appointments. My mother knew. And she goes, Lisa, I have to stop you. And I said, what? She goes, your mother had you removed off of the HIPAA list. And I said, Susie, she can't do that. And she said she was able to. She came up here and as at 1 o'clock had an appointment and had you removed from the HIPAA list. I can't talk to you anymore. I can't call you anymore. And I called my father. And I was in a rage. I was like, Dad, why am I removed off your? I never removed you off my HIPAA list, Lisa. I said, Mom did. She had me removed. I'll get it changed, Lisa. They wouldn't change it back.
Wow.
Yeah. And my mom used her.
So he couldn't go to any of his cancer appointments to find out if the cancer was back and he's in remission. So there's no way for him to know if he was still in remission or treatments or anything.
And do you know it's a doctor's responsibility if a patient is missing appointments, that if they have any kind of suspicion that a caregiver is not getting them to their appointments or telling them about their appointments, or if the patient is missing excessive appointments, they are to notify APS or the Department of Aging. Dr. Kurt Lunenberg and Dr. Kassav did neither because my father was missing both sets of his appointments. But fast forward, I reported the doctors to the medical board, and the medical board said that this was a teaching moment to the doctors. Yes, they should have notified the proper authorities, but no action would be taken against either doctor. And yes.
Can I say something here? People think that HIPAA is to protect the privacy of the patient. And it has nothing to do with the sort with the patient. It is to protect the actions of the doctor and the hospital staff, if they're available, from being prosecuted for malpractice and wrongdoing. If a doctor makes notations directly into your file, the doctor then claims they own that file. So you never allow them to do that. I have a certified statement on file at my doctor's office that any notations that the doctor makes are to be kept separate from my medical file. That way that file remains in my possession as my property. Okay, now my testing can be in there, doctor visit can be in there and all that. I have a right to all of that, it belongs to me. But the doctor is prohibited from putting any notations into that file other than medical testing, that kind of thing.
But know what, Marty? People don't know this.
What?
Right.
Right.
People don't know what you just said.
Right, exactly.
Yep.
So that if I understand what you're saying, and I think we talked about this, but if you tell your doctor, you have it in writing that says, I do not want you to make any handwritten notes on my file,
right.
Remains yours. Otherwise, if
yes.
he puts handwritten notes on it, then that's his file and he doesn't have to give it to you, nor would he have to give
that's
it to
right.
an attorney or police or anybody
right.
else, right? Okay.
Correct.
It's
all
it's
about protecting
property.
Them.
Yes, HIPAA has nothing to do with protecting the patient. It is a way to offset malpractice lawsuits. You can't get the file.
Correct.
And by the time you file, like on discovery or something else, or you demand copies and you go to court to demand that they give you copies of these files, and it can be done, but it will cost you tens of thousands of dollars to do it.
Yes,
and
it
it's because they put personal notations in there. And once they do that, They claim under HIPAA that that file now belongs to the doctor. It doesn't belong to the patient. So the patient is out of the picture at this point. HIPAA has mm-hmm. nothing to do with protection, patient privacy. It was another bill that was passed that schmoozed everybody. It sounded like it meant one thing, when in actuality it was a move against you. And but people don't realize it till they're caught in these situations and find out they can't even see their own file.
But Marty, they also destroy the files. They can also destroy notes. And people will tell you, oh, no, once you put a note in ethic, it's there forever. That's not true. I used to work for a local hospital. Exactly. In 2012, I worked for a local hospital here in Cincinnati. I know for a fact that if you put in a note in ethic and it's not something that the doctors or the office coordinator or the manager wants in that file, a note can be removed from Epic. And these doctors do have notes destroyed. It's all about covering themselves. And the medical board consists of doctors. The medical board is going to, it's just like the police. The union, police protect police and doctors protect doctors. The board of nursing, it consists of nurses that work, that were in the nursing field. They work for the board of nursing. They're all going to protect each other, no matter how corrupt they are.
They're all unions.
Yeah,
they're all unions. When they scream about unions in this country and about, you know, the electrical union or this, you know, it's ruining the country, they never talk about the bar unions. They never talk about the medical association unions. They never talk about the nursing unions. They don't talk about any of them. You know, they never mention
that. It's so hard
to
fire. It's so hard.
Yeah.
It's so hard to fire a doctor or a nurse. In fact, the hospital that I used to work for, Christ Hospital, they had a doctor that was, now I don't know how he was fired, but this doctor was doing surgeries while he was intoxicated. And a big lawsuit happened. He did take some time off of working, and they just moved to another state a few years ago. So he and his wife, who are both doctors, moved to another state and are practicing in the state of Georgia. This is how crazy this is.
He didn't face any jail time.
Exactly. And just like nurses, bad nurses, they hop all around from different
place
hospitals.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
In fact, one of the nurses that admitted my father into hospice against his will, her name is Amy L. Arnold. She used to work for Optum Hospice. She now works for UC Health in their hospice group. So,
One of the ladies that was at my mom's, I've looked to see if I can find her on their website, and she's gone somewhere else. I don't know where she went. But go back to 2014. Your dad was in remission. He wasn't going to his appointments because your mom was keeping that from him. So,
yes, she was.
Okay, did he go back at some point and find out that the cancer had come back?
The cancer came back in January of 2015. I would say about February to March of 2015. And I had to, and my dad was going for treatments. I had to get my uncle involved because at that point, my mother and I was talking to my mother all the way up until the incident that happened with my father. My mother
she
had
took
changed.
Off of HIPAA.
Exactly.
When
my
she took
mother.
You off of HIPAA. Okay.
Exactly. My mother actually in 2014 had a hospital stay herself. And after that hospital stay, she stayed at Oak Hills Nursing and Rehab as a patient herself, and she stayed there for about a month, and she got to know this nursing home, the nursing director and the social service director and the staff. And my mother and I, we quit talking after the incident with HIPAA, and in February, I told my father, I said, Dad, your voice is getting scratchy. Don't you think so? Yeah, it's okay. I just have a cold. No, Dad, you don't have a cold. You had esophageal cancer. This is not something to play with. You got to get to the doctor. So he went to the doctor. and it was Zach. And the only reason I was able to convince him to go back to the doctor, I had to get my uncle, who lived in New Orleans, involved, his older brother. And my uncle talked to my mother, and he talked to my father. My father, more than willing to go, my uncle had to more or less say, Carol, get off your rear end and get Bill, go with Bill to the doctor. You took Lisa off the HIPAA list. Get Bill to the doctor, because you have made it so that Lisa can't take him to the doctor. So she and her grandson and my father went to the doctor. And my uncle actually had to call my father's grandson and tell him, look, this is what's going on. Your grandmother is not acting right. Your grandfather needs to go to the doctor. He tells me he's going to go. I want to make sure he goes. And my father's grandson agreed, and he went with them. And the cancer was back, the esophageal cancer. And my dad was doing both chemo and radiation. And fast forward to June 9th, 2015 was a Monday. I talked to my father every single day. And we would go to church on Sunday nights at St. Lawrence, at a local church here in Cincinnati. And it was a 7 o'clock mass. And my father didn't show up. And I kept calling his cell phone. He wouldn't answer. I called the house phone. Nobody would answer. I was growing worried because he never missed church. My father was a very devout Catholic man, Catholic Christian, never missed church. Monday morning, I'm trying to call him. I called him all day Monday. And when I couldn't get a response by Tuesday, I called the local police district, Green Township Police, to do a wellness check at their house. And the officer went there, did a wellness check, and then he came over to my house. He told me it took about 10 minutes for her to answer the door. And this is so crazy. It's embarrassing, but it's crazy. But my mother answered the door and said to the officer, what, did the whore call you? And the officer's like, exact. This is. I'm trying to show you the mental state of my mother.
Right, right. Gotcha.
And the officer was taken aback by that, because when he came over to my house, he's like, I was shocked myself. He goes, I'm not allowed to tell you where your father is per your mother, but do me a favor, call the hospital. And I said, which one? He goes, the one that's closest to you. So
Mercy
Hospital.
She had admitted him to the hospital?
She dropped him off at the emergency room late Sunday night, which is considered Monday morning, and dropped him off at the curb. And my father admitted himself. Yes, that's my mother. But I didn't find this out until one of the nurses told me at the hospital. In fact, I didn't get to talk to my father. I'm going through, okay, Monday, didn't know where he was. Tuesday, did the wellness check. The cop said, check with the local hospitals. After the officer left, I called Mercy Hospital demanding to know what my father's room was, and I need to speak to him right now, because I was going to head over there right then. Me and my ex-boyfriend were. And the Mercy Hospital, we can't give any information. And I was like, I need to speak to my father. Finally, the lady said to me, the receptionist said, call in the morning and speak to social services. So first, and she said they open at 7:30. First thing I did, 7:30, I called social services of Mercy Hospital. I spoke to a very nice woman. And she said, ma'am, she said, honey, I can't tell you anything per Carol Papania. And I said, you're kidding me. I said, and I started crying. I was like, I need to know if my father's dead. I said, you have to understand, we're dealing with a mentally ill woman that has an opiate addiction to painkillers. I need to know if my mother is not in her right mind until I get to court and get guardianship over my father. I need to know, is my father there or is he in your morgue? She says, I can tell you this. he's not in the morgue. Okay? So all day Wednesday, I'm making calls to lawyers, getting meetings set up for guardianship because my mom was just gone at this point, okay? She actually, in the notes, she had, and I have Mercy Hospital's notes, she had it noted, per the wife, no one, no family or friends is to have information on patients due to financial and physical abuse. My mother tried to say that I would rob her. I kid you not, this is what the social worker said. My mother said that if my father was in the hospital, that I would come over and rob her and beat her up. She's a narcissist. She played victim all her life. She acted like my father beat her, and she acted like I beat her, okay? That was her M.O. And Thursday, she called my ex-boyfriend, and she said, you can tell Lisa she can go see her father now. I've lifted the ban from anybody seeing her father. And he was trying to get more information out of her, and she just hung up on him. We rushed up to the hospital. Come to find out, the nurse told me everything. The only reason my mother gave that information and removed the ban from anyone seeing my father is that she herself had gotten escorted out of the hospital for yelling and screaming at my father. He was being discharged, and she had to come up there. And she purposely threw a fit and was escorted out of the hospital by security.
So did he get discharged from the hospital and go back home? Or did he go to
the
rehab center?
Here's what's crazy. They tried to discharge him on Wednesday. They tried to discharge him on Thursday. She wouldn't answer her phone on Wednesday. They tried to discharge him on Thursday. She came up there in a rage and was screaming at him. The nurse, her name is Stacy Shelton, was so uncomfortable and scared of my mother and scared for the welfare being of my father that she had security escort her out. Friday morning, social services tried to call my mom thinking she was calmed down and that they were trying to discharge my father. My mother wouldn't answer the phone. I left the hospital. I had spent the night Thursday night with him. I left Thursday morning. My father was perfectly fine. Come to find out, at noon, the hospital decided that my father needed emergency surgery. And my father, yeah. Hospitals and doctors make the most money? They make them in surgeries.
Well, right, and procedures, running tests and stuff. So
exactly.
He was in the hospital. His esophageal cancer had come back. So were they saying that
they weren't treating him for that at the hospital? What they were doing, they were treating
him.
Right. What they did is they did a bowel. He was having stomach cramps. They did a bowel obstruction surgery. And my father signed off on it. You know, you have a doctor telling you you need surgery. You tend to believe doctors.
Exactly.
You make the mistake. We believe the professionals, when actually the professionals are nothing but scam artists mostly.
Right.
And
well, we know now.
Exactly. And
right.
My father had surgery. And now they did discover a benign lesion, non-cancerous lesion on my father's liver. My mother lied and told all of the family and everyone that it wasn't, that instead of the truth, which was a benign lesion on his liver, she told them he was filled with cancer everywhere. And in fact, my mother actually went AWOL, and the hospital, the social service workers at Mercy Hospital could not get a hold of my father after the surgery on June. Not a hold of my mother after June 12th. My mother literally did not see my father from June 12th until June 21st. And they were going to give me custody of my father. If she didn't call them by 2 o'clock on June 21st, social service workers who were doing an investigation on my mother and had contacted APS was going to give me custody of my father at 2 o'clock on June 21st. Well, my mother found out at the last moment that this was happening. Mind you, she wasn't talking to them. They were leaving her numerous messages and threats that they were going to do this. She called Dr. Kassav, and on instead of releasing my father to me on June 21st at 2 o'clock, he met with my mother. He went with her wishes of making my father a DNR and to put him into hospice. My father was doing great after the surgery, everything, and my mother demanded hospice, and Dr. Kassav, being the kind of doctor he was quick to sign off on it. And
so let me just go back here. He did not have esophageal cancer. They had a bowel blockage. They removed that, and they said he had non-cancerous lesions.
Correct, but he still had esophageal cancer.
Okay,
and it's in the hospital. And in the hospital records, the doctor that did the surgery on him, Dr. Matthew Funch of Mercy Hospital, said that it was a benign lesion on his liver and that Mr. Papania is doing better, all of this stuff, and that he does need to go to a rehab facility to put on weight and then continue his his treatment for cancer.
Okay.
That was what Dr. Matthew Funch said. My hope is that Mr. Papania goes to a rehab facility and puts on weight and does physical therapy and then starts his treatments again for his esophageal cancer.
Okay. So then on the 21st of June, your mom talks to the doctor, and the next thing you know, he's going to be put into hospice, but not into the rehab facility.
Correct.
Okay.
I knew he was going into the rehab facility, and I even had a message from my mother saying that they were going to put him into a rehab facility. That's what hospitals do after your stay. You go to a rehab facility, and she emphasized on the voicemail that I still have, he's not going into a nursing home for good, Lisa. He is only going there after the hospital discharges him for a short time.
Okay.
And
gotcha.
Come to find out, she met with Hospice of Cincinnati, and Hospice of Cincinnati in their records said that my father was not a candidate for hospice. Okay. She told the nursing director Jennifer Ball Fitzwater and the social service director Amanda Mastaserio, both of these women work for Oak Hills Nursing and Rehab, that Hospice of Cincinnati turned her down. So then they went with Optum Hospice. And like I said, Optum Hospice, I told you their history. Amy Arnold, she admitted my father into hospice. But what they did, instead of putting my father in hospice right away, they put him in an Oak Hills Nursing and Rehab on June 24th, okay, and July 22nd or 21st of July, they declared him hospice. And that, you saw the notes. The notes say, I don't know if it was Marty's page or another page that I saw it. I think it was NASA's page where they said somebody was in trouble. Nursing homes do this. They put people through rehab. See, this is all part of that Medicare fraud. They rack up all this extra money that they can bill Medicare for, and they know they have a patient that they're going to put in for hospice, but in the meantime, they play it off like, oh, patient's doing great. He's in rehab. He's doing physical therapy, all this stuff. They nickel and dime Medicare all they can, and then all of a sudden, they put my father in hospice against his will. And I told my father from the start, Dad, they're putting you in hospice. Oh, no, they're not, Lisa. I'm getting out of here. In fact, my dad has the most loyal friends there are that work for the post office. And a couple of them I know by name, John Lane and James Martino, they went up to the nursing home every day to play cards with my father after they would get off work, and my dad's favorite thing was Milky Way candy bars. John Lane would bring him Milky Way candy bars. they would go up there every day to play cards with my father because they knew he was being kept in that wheelchair. They knew he was being isolated at that nurse's station. And one time my mom broke character in front of the John Lane and James Martinez. Whenever my dad would have visitors, the nurses would call my mom and let her know. And she would all my mom never came up there to visit my father. But what she would do was talk to the nurses and kind of scope out who was visiting my father. My father saw her. John Lane told me this. My father saw her and said, "Carol, come over here. Carol, come over here." This sounds bizarre, but this is true. And my dad said, "Carol, take me out of here now. I'm going home today. You're taking me home." She actually, in front of John Lane and James Martino, bent over and said to him, "Bill, you're never leaving here. You're dying here." And then she left.
Oh, my God.
Okay, can I break in here for just a minute, please?
Sure.
We have a couple callers on here, Marcia, Lisa. Carly's dad is on, and he wants to speak to you for a moment. Do you mind?
Sure. Not a problem.
Okay. Go ahead.
Well, hello to both of y'all this afternoon. How you doing?
Hello.
How you doing?
Doing well. You've had some good information out there, and I've enjoyed listening to it. Couple of things I might would want to point out that I learned some real hard lessons from is the second opinion deal. And I was kind of unaware. I never had anybody in my family admitted to hospice. And
correct.
And as I found out, you know, one of the prerequisites for Medicare, physician said you're supposed to have less than 6 months to live.
Right.
Not the case.
Right. But I mean, even to me, that doesn't make any sense because they can kill you within a week or a day or two, depending on, you know, what doses they want to give you or whatever.
You're absolutely correct, sir. These doctors, they know that they are untouchable. This doctor, you know, my father was 67 years old. This doctor, my father had mild dementia, sir. And I'm talking so mild, it was listed by the surgeon. My father had mild memory loss. Everybody that knew my father knew he only had mild memory loss. This doctor, Dr. Prashant R. Kasav, he had my father listed as advanced dementia. He was incompetent, and that he was terminally ill. My father was none of that. My father, sir, was actually driving a car the day before he was put into the hospital. Now, you tell me, can a person with advanced dementia and is incompetent, they can barely feed themselves or even dress themselves. My father was driving a car.
Yeah.
But he was
playing cards. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, see, what happens, though, is the soft sale will let us help you. You don't need to do this all by yourself. And then the sale that they actually gave my daughter and myself was, you will be surprised what just a few nights' rest can do for a person sometimes.
I said, okay,
you know, I don't know nothing about hospice. I'm still ignorant. You know, I hate to say that.
We believe that.
You believe the medical professionals.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, we were a little unique with things, and we noticed that first day they put a catheter in my mother. My mother was getting up using a walker and a potty chair. Now, why you got a catheter in her the next morning? Because we came
right,
back the next morning.
Right, that's the first thing they do.
And
yes, sir.
Then the second thing we noticed, you know, was the incoherence and this and that. My daughter, having several degrees, you know, a pre-med, and one of them was chemistry. And she actually made them get a list of everything that they were giving my mother. And she came home and cross-referenced it, told me, "Dad, they're killing Granny." I said, "What do you mean?" She said, "Well, it's a combination of morphine, Roxanol, Haldol, Seroquel. You know, you just go on down the line. They're giving her all that, and it's actually shutting her organs down, they're dehydrating her. Well,
right.
You know, one good way to check a place like that is, well, like when I was a policeman, you check a place when they don't expect it. You go back at night. You go back on the
right.
third shift. You go back on the third shift and see what's going on. And we came in and actually found my mother incoherent, and I give my daughter a lot of credit. She called the ambulance and the police, and I called the police from outside, and I told them my history. I'm retired. I'm a baby boomer. I'm in the Medicare. I got to watch all this stuff too, you know. And anyway,
right, you got a great daughter though to watch over you.
Oh yeah, and
that's absolutely true.
We told this mm-hmm. guy, you know, she's coming out of here with us in this little silver car, the ambulance, or a wheelbarrow, but she's coming out of here. And a police officer looked like The Rock, the wrestler. I couldn't have got a better one. This guy, he was a giant. Hmm. And he just asked the lady, you going to give them any problems? She turned that paper around and I signed it so quick. Well, we got her out of there, and we got her to the hospital. Now, this is two different doctors and all diagnosing her with end-stage cardiomyopathy and stage 4 chronic renal disease. And when we got my mother to a good hospital, the doctor came out and asked us, said, do you know what's wrong with your mother? I said, no, sir, I don't. He said she has a urinary tract infection.
Wow.
And that is it. I said, mm-hmm. you are kidding me. And I said, how much morphine did they give? Well, they gave her rocks and all, which is concentrated form.
Liquid morphine.
Yeah, and he told me that 5 milligrams was, you know, enough for a man, mine, 180-pound man. He said they gave your mother 40 milligrams over a day and a half.
Wow.
So she stayed
like...
And
you know what their intent was.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't expect you to figure it out or to Carly to figure it out.
Exactly.
And your precious mother would have been gone 4 years ago.
And
you know what? Thank God she had family that loves her. And was
Look,
it, and, you know?
My daughter gave up, put her life on hold. I did myself. I tell you what, we had 4 blessed years. But even going back beyond that, if a doctor says a person's got 6 months to live, why send them somewhere and kill them in 2 or 3 days when that 6 months might be very important to a daughter or a wife.
And to be kept at home, to be kept at home where you're with your family who loves you.
But also, only God is the one that knows how long you have on this earth. Why are doctors given this power?
Well, you look at most local hospices. They're locally owned. It's hard to prosecute them.
Right.
They put a lot of money in the county, and then again, it is so hard to prove negligence on them once you sign them in, because they've got complete control.
They own them.
Once you sign them in, they held the medical power of attorney. Now you know that. Once you sign them in, they go. You know, a nurse will just get it over a. Email, you know, whatever they may do with that. But I'm not trying to butt in and give any comments, but that second opinion, I mean, I'm glad we came out like we did. We were blessed. God was with us. But anytime anybody's going to a hospice, Medicare ought to require a second opinion.
But you know what?
It's about the money. It's about the money at that point.
Oh, yeah,
they don't want to pay for that. But we
do you know
as,
also, but do you know the more drugs they use, the higher the hospice patient payment? That I found that out.
Yes.
As you saw with my father's medical records, all of the drugs back to back on a man they were starving and dehydrating.
Right.
The higher the payment from hospice of Medicare, the more drugs you use, it appears to hospice that this patient needs it. It's a higher hospice patient
but
payment.
But the other thing is, Lisa, there's a limit that hospice will pay. For 2018, they changed it. It's like $28,000, and that is the limit that Medicare will pay for a hospice patient. My mom was at that limit.
Why do you think such a rush to kill them? That's the thing.
Yes.
My father was my father entered that place on June 24th, and my father fought to the very end, and he would not die. They had to kill him. They first tried to kill him on August 4th. That didn't work. The day before they tried to kill him on August 4th, on August 3rd, they cut his hair very short. They shaved his arms. They shaved his beard. I even had a detective from another police district tell me the reason they're removing the hair, Lisa, is because the hair follicle contains all the information of what drugs they're using and how long. He even said this. They're getting rid of the evidence, Lisa.
They shaved his arms, too?
They shaved his arms. I had that picture, and posted it on Facebook. My father was all doped up on Haldol, of course, and they had him where he was practically comatose, a poor father in a wheelchair, out in display for everybody to see. And they shaved his hair, and then the next day he's supposedly dying.
What did they possibly give you to do that, though?
We're preparing. See, you don't understand. I dealt with some of the most ruthless. These women were in their 20s and 30s. I dealt with the most ruthless women that had been doing this. They're serial killers. They really are. And there was no reason to shave his hair. There was no reason to shave his beard.
Well, that's almost like trying to clean up a crime scene. You see what I'm saying?
It's a premeditated murder, sir.
You know, that's watching it now.
Okay. Can everybody hold up? We've got another caller on that's... Go ahead.
Okay.
Lisa,
some of the pictures you had posted, he actually had sores, and your mom had told him that they were not to be treated at all.
And here's the funny thing. That they have an MD there that her name is Dr. Najma Khan. Let me tell you something. Her name is just a formality. Dr. Najma Khan never goes there. In fact, my father had staples in him from the bowel obstruction surgery that was to be removed on June 26th. July 10th, I had my boyfriend talk to my father and convince him to let him see if the staples were there. So my father said, yes, they are. But my father, of course, I didn't want to see him lift his shirt up. My boyfriend said, Lisa, those staples are still there. We took a picture of them. We had to go through the ombudsman on July 10th and tell them the staples were still there. My father developed MRSA and had a horrible infection because they left the staples in him still. And then... Mm-hmm. On top of that, they said, our doctor, she's been so busy, she hasn't had a time to come over and do it. Ridiculous. Get them out.
No excuse.
And then on top of that, this Dr. Najma Khan, she didn't sign off on these drugs and all that, but it's noted in the records, per MD and POA, that's what my mother was called, per MD and POA, do not treat ulcers. Patient is hospice.
Right.
Okay, if everybody wants to hold here, we have another caller online that's been waiting. Area code 740, do you have a question or comment for our guest?
Question. Hi, Marty, it's Rosanna.
Oh, hi, Rosanna.
Hi. I have a couple things I want to ask about, but staying outside of the store, I mean, you know, the events of what happened, because they happen to all of us, let's face it. They're all the same similar stories, right? But I'm about remedy. I've been in this 12 years, and I'm about trying to find remedy and what we can do about this. Marcia's on the phone, right?
Yes.
Okay. Hi, Marcia.
Hi, Rosanna.
I will contact you through email. Obviously know about Medicare hospice contracts and what all that involves, maybe?
To some degree, yes.
Okay. Lisa, is the place that your father was at, I noticed on the blog, it says in Ohio?
Yes, that is correct.
I'm
in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Okay. I'm in Ohio too. That's what's interesting. But my situation is the northwest part of Ohio, up in Logan County, with an assisted living place up there. But I wanted to ask you guys something. So we all, you know, we're complaining about hospice, but your father was in a guardianship, right, Lisa?
No, that's the crazy thing. Guess what? They did this all. My father, they committed a crime, and I'm trying to get, I'm speaking with people about this right now, but my father was not in a guardianship. My mother was POA, and I was her substitute POA. I actually went to go get guardianship of my father and paid for a lawyer and all of that good stuff, and part of the step to get guardianship, the doctor that had seen my father, a good doctor, a neurologist, I can't say it, but Dr. Arthur Hughes, he went up to the nursing home. What we had to do in court for me to get guardianship, see, my lawyer and the Dr. Hughes, who knew my mother, said they both agreed I will be able to get guardianship due to my mother's mental illness and her addiction to opiate painkillers. All we needed was Dr. Arthur Hughes to go up to the nursing home, evaluate my father, and because my mother tried to get Dr. Arthur Hughes to make my father declared incompetent. Okay, she tried to get him to lie and falsify records, and Dr. Arthur Hughes said, no, I'm not doing no such thing. Well, Dr. Arthur Hughes went up to Oak Hills Nursing and Rehab to visit with my father. This is all part of me obtaining guardianship. Katie Teak and Christina Baker would not allow him to see my father and turn Dr. Hughes away. So
okay, well,
I lost all chances to get guardianship.
Outside of all that.
Right.
Okay, so your mother is married to your father, right?
Yes, she was.
So that's his wife, though. I mean, I'm just trying to put this all in perspective in my head.
It sounds
here.
Crazy, doesn't it?
That's his wife,
it
though.
Does.
And so yeah. if she, I mean, you know, you're trying to trump her, and obviously your dad was sick. I heard that already. He had some form of cancer. And so obviously she's putting him on hospice to get this, all right? And aside from the fact that you couldn't usurp her and get guardianship, she's kind of in control. I mean, the bottom line is she's in control of the situation because she's his wife and power of attorney and all that kind of stuff. So you're kind of up a creek without a paddle. But the thing of it is, like, I don't want to go down my story. Pretty bad, but my dad was in a guardianship, and my father got my sister got guardianship of my dad 2 months before he died, and my dad didn't have a terminal illness. He didn't. He had dementia, but he didn't have any illnesses. You know, I had heart problems and all this kind of stuff, but he doesn't have any illnesses. And so my sister, they were giving him pain medicines for 3 years, actually, psychotropic drugs, and morphine. And when she got guardianship the last 2 months, she said, she was the guardian, though. See what I'm saying? She was the guardian. And she says, no more morphine. He's got pain medicine if he needs it. I don't even know why he needs it because he doesn't have any illnesses. But, you know, he's got pain medicine. Don't give him that morphine. It's just zapping him out. Well, the judge removed her because the Campbell house where he was living emailed the judge ex parte, and the judge removed my sister, ordered my dad back on hospice. 9 days later, dad was dead. There was no morphine in his system, but there was cyanide.
Did you get
Were you able to get an autopsy? Yeah, I got a toxicology too. That's how I know that.
I hate to say good for you, but you know you're one of the very few because the whole part is to isolate, over medicate, and cremate. And guess what they did to my father? They cremated him.
This is why I want to get with you, Marcia.
POA and guardians. POAs and guardians have so much control over a human's life.
Right. But where I was going with all this was the guardian. Here's where I'm going with this. Look, I know nurses, the assisted and nursing homes, all these people are mandatory reporters by law. Any one of these nurses could step out and say, look, why can't we try this person at home? They're crying out. We're just giving him drugs. Why can't they're crying to go home? Why can't they could step out about a lot of these things, but they won't do it because they're afraid, you know, to lose their job, retaliation, blah, blah, blah. But my sister used to get at hospice, and I says, but Kathy, the guardian, this wicked, nasty attorney who's the guardian, is ordering my dad on hospice. Hospice is doing their job. They're doing exactly what they were ordered to do. It's the guardian that's the problem. Now, in your case, Lisa, your mom was the, not guardian, but she was the, you know, she was the one that was calling the shots. So if she's wants your dad on hospice, unless you can get guardianship out from underneath her, you're kind of, like I said, in a boat without a, you know, an oar.
But let me ask you yeah. this, though. My father didn't want to be in hospice.
Well,
my father wanted to go home.
Right. You know what?
Right.
I'm there with you. I'm not arguing
right.
with that.
I understand. Right.
It's just the control
yeah.
of who's got somebody that this is coming down
right.
to. And my problem was that how could my father be put on hospice without a terminal illness? There's a
This is why I want to talk about my mother. And nobody had guardianship
okay.
of her.
Yeah, I want to
okay.
talk about, like, the laws
listen,
and try to get
everyone. Right. We're down to about 4 minutes here. Roseanne, thank you for calling in. Lisa, Marcia.
Yes.
If we need to wrap this up, so
okay.
Lisa,
Go ahead. One more point that Lisa had. Lisa, the comment that
yes.
your mother made in the hospital about the money. When she
all
said
saying that I would rob her. Yes.
Well, because she had said that she had already spent $17,000 on him.
Oh no, she made that comment at the nursing home. Remember I said August
right.
3rd is when they shaved his hair. August 4th they tried to kill him and it didn't work.
Right.
On August 5th, the next day, we were there up there at the nursing home. I was up there with my father at the nursing home, and so was my ex-boyfriend, my parents' grandson, and my mother. And we're all around them, and it was a very horrible time, but I was with my father more or less to watch everything she was doing. Me and her had an argument, and I told her he wanted to go home. You put him into hospice, and she made the comment. She actually stood up in her chair and said, I spent $13,000 so far. It's time for him to die. And she started talking
oh,
about
God.
Him being in front of my father. He could hear all of this. And then she started talking about him being cremated. And my mother's grandson had to tell her, her grandson Tyler said enough, because he did stop her, because here she is, she's talking about cremating my father, and there he is sitting in the bed
right,
alive.
And let me skip because we only have 3 more minutes, but I also wanted to bring up the point that 3 days after your father was murdered, you were picked up.
I was arrested at home.
Calling in, right. So they were trying to keep you from bringing this story up. So there is a big cover up there, and it was
exactly,
you know, a trumped up charge on you that 3 days after your father's murdered, you get picked up by the police. So
picked up. They came to my house. And they,
right.
here's a real quick thing. On August 18th, they came to my house and said that I was being arrested. It wasn't a physical arrest where they handcuffed me, but they served me papers. I was being arrested on August 18th, and the officer said, if you don't sign this paper, I'm going to come to your father's funeral tomorrow and arrest you in the church in front of everybody. This cop, you know, these cops, I've said many times on my page, I encourage anyone to look at my page for the records and notes, but he said he would arrest me at my father's funeral. I was arrested for a 911 call I made on June 27th. They arrested me on August 18th for a 911 call I made on June 27th when I called at 4 a.m. saying my father was not breathing. But I used a false name,
And that's how they were able to get me, because I used a fake name. Now, everybody knows that patients will be retaliated. I used a false name, and so that my father wouldn't. My father told me many times that he would get hurt. And Lisa, every time you call the state, I pay the price for it. He was getting beat up by a CNA named nicknamed Tiny. But because I made a used a false name, that's what they pulled out of their
right,
hat.
Right, and then the charges
and
were dropped later. So you,
the
I just
judge
want to
found
make that
me
clear.
Not guilty.
Right.
The judge
so
read
you
through
want
it
to
all.
Add? You've got 60 seconds. Is there anything that you want to tell the audience?
I want people to know that to make sure that they have the proper people in place who are their POAs, their it doesn't have to be family sometimes, as you can see. Have the proper people in place. Do your research on hospice. Please do.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you, Lisa, so much for telling us your story. I know how hard that was for you and how you still have nightmares, even though it's been, you know, 3.5 years. It's still hard to deal with, and we appreciate you calling in. Marty has the number, the email address. If anybody has a story that they want to come on air and talk about, we'll be glad to hear that. Lisa has the supporting documentation for everything that she's given us. Marty, back
yes,
to you.
Yes, she does. Yes. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in tonight. We've had a major audience here. Marcia, thank you for picking this up and stepping in for Carly. Everybody appreciates it. And we'll be back in 2 weeks with another show with Marcia. She'll be doing her shows every other week, and hopefully at some point in time when Carly has fully recovered from everything, she'll be back to pick up those off weeks. So we'll go from there. Thank you again, everyone, for tuning in, and good night.
Thank you, Mark.
Good night.